Let's bring in Alvin Williams, Sportsnet's NBA analyst and the 76ers pro personnel scout. Good morning, Mr. Williams.
Hey, guys. How are you this morning?
We're doing well. We were wondering if Blake Griffin, when the Clippers did that sort of mock uniform retirement ceremony for him when he signed the five-year contract, we're wondering if he thought he'd ever end up in Detroit before the first year was out. My guess is he didn't.
Yeah, I'm figuring he didn't believe it. I mean, when that reality smacks you in the face as you're getting traded and the rumors sink out and stuff like that, it's hard to face it. But I'm sure after the circumstance of signing a big contract, you know, he's back healthy and the team was doing pretty well, that that was the last thing on his mind.
Okay, what does he mean? What does he mean for the Pistons? And I guess more importantly, as we mentioned, they're 2.5 out of a playoff spot. They obviously think they have a chance at getting back in the playoffs. I think they're, 3-12 since Reggie Jackson's gone. He's expected back. So what could he do for this team this year and also long-term, Alvin?
Well, he's another playmaker. You know, Blake he's expanding his game. He's handling the ball more. His outside shot is a lot better. Of course, he has that explosiveness and the athleticism going to the basket. So, I mean, he has all the tools that could bring a good, you know, push for the Detroit Pistons. It's just if he can stay healthy and he can just blend in right with the team, what they already have established. But, you know, the Pistons have been struggling a little bit, so this could be a good push, you know, right from the outset.
And as far as the Clippers are concerned, it's an interesting one too, because it feels like you don't want to be in the middle in the NBA. You don't want to be this team that's kind of muddling along and they're pretty good and they're not getting over the top. And we already saw that, right? CP gets traded to the Rockets. We already saw this process coming. And now you're really more in the middle, even though they kind of overachieved this year and Lou Williams is just balling out of control and they've got some guys playing really well, but they felt like this isn't sustainable. I guess from that standpoint, it makes sense, you know, to trade Griffin. Do you now strip it down? Does DeAndre have to go? Does Lou have to go? Do you have to trade everything that's not staple to the floor at this point?
I mean, that's what it looks like, but you never know. I didn't know. I don't know the temperament of the team.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what Blake meant to the organization. What did they really see in him moving forward, or how much they really saw him moving forward, especially from a locker room or in a team culture standpoint. You know, he just signed into a big deal, but it just didn't look like that whole chemistry thing was there with them, whether it was due injury, whether it was, and that's what they faced a lot of times. Especially in the postseason, you know, Chris Paul would get hurt, Blake Griffin got hurt, you know, and they just had this hard time, especially in the postseason. So you never know. But right now it looks like they're on the verge of breaking that whole thing up. You know, talks about DeAndre Jordan getting traded and stuff like that. So it looks like they may be breaking it up from just this last move with Blake Griffin.
So let's talk about the team that you work for. You're a pro personnel scout for the Philadelphia 76ers. You're trusting the process over there. I like it. The process is exciting. Started, of course, a few years ago, and with Hinkie, we're on to new management. And this is an exciting team, you know, starting with Embiid, who's just freakishly good and freakishly athletic, but don't sleep on Covington. Don't sleep on Saric. I mean, this is a talented team. You are out there, and you are mining for more talent. You're out there looking at what's going on. You're scouting the league. How do you look at this Sixers team in terms of where it is in the process compared to the rest of the league? Because potential is a 14 out of 10 right now. How far along is this team in terms of gelling?
No, they're gelling. You know, they're all on the same page. Coach Brown does a good job of keeping the guys in tune. He's starting to do a much better job, to me, with the talent that he's having and keeping them, holding them accountable. And just right now, it's all about growing. They're still young. And, you know, through the whole process that everyone's talking about, the idea of winning was a lot of times lost in that message. You know, now it's about winning. So the players have to learn how to win. They have to learn how to close games out. They have to learn how to be disciplined. And that comes with maturity. And then when you have those young guys getting more mature, you add a couple pieces. You add a J.J. Redick. You add a Jared Bayless. And then you try to add more to that to help the young guys out. So I think everything is right on track for the team to continue to see success. So I'm very happy where the team is. I think the coaching staff and management is happy where the team is. And as soon as there's more consistency out of Joel Embiid from his minute restriction, you know, the team will even be that much better moving forward.
Oh, and how much do you think as well this deal by the Pistons? And this kind of ties in with what you guys are doing. I mean, I'm sure everybody in the East is looking around right now. And yeah, Boston's going to be awfully good. Boston's young. They've got some moves they can still make. They're going to be good. But I think a lot of people view what's going on with Cleveland right now and the possibility that LeBron isn't back. And it almost I'm wondering, Alvin, if maybe teams aren't maybe adjusting their ETA or aren't maybe taking a closer look at contending a little earlier than possible because of what's gone on in Cleveland. I don't know. Maybe you can't think that way. Maybe it operates independently at that. But I thought about that as soon as I saw the Pistons getting Blake Griffin as well, is the Pistons are sitting there kind of getting ready for life after LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something you have to look at. You have to look at the projections and you have to look at where your organization is and where's the rest of the competition heading. And, you know, Cleveland is not, they're not the one that's leading the charge in the East right now. You know, Boston and Toronto are right there. And Cleveland, you can't count them out because of LeBron. But if you look at the future, you don't know if LeBron's coming back. And if he doesn't come back, you know, Cleveland's probably going to be at the bottom of the pile again. So other teams definitely have an opportunity, not just this year, I believe, because Cleveland's not playing that great, but in the future. And I think Boston and Toronto are those two teams. And as you just mentioned, Detroit making a move for Blake Griffin, that could be a message saying we're serious about the future and we're serious about winning sooner than later.
It's funny, we were talking about the Pistons earlier and we were talking about who was the last super elite player who played for the Pistons. It might have been Grant Hill, and the last team that won the title didn't have Grant Hill. They had Billups and Wallace and Wallace and Hamilton, and those were all really good players, but probably none of them were a top 10 player. And I guess the way to go into this, you know, you've got Embiid, who's got this immense talent. You've got Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is a unicorn. He's a 6'10 point guard who doesn't really shoot, but get into the lane and do anything he wants anytime. I don't know if I've ever seen a player like Ben Simmons, frankly. So you've got these two guys who could be super duper stars. We'll see what happens. But I'm wondering if, you know, this trade for Griffin, the idea of having these super teams, the idea of OKC signing or going after two elite guys in that way, can you win in the NBA the way that those Pistons teams in 04 and 05 did, where you've got four or five or six really good guys rather than one, you know, Larry Bird, LeBron type of absolute superstar?
It's very hard to, it's very hard to accumulate that type of talent that Detroit got all at once.
Yeah.
And the other thing is having all of those type of guys believe in winning. That's the biggest part. When you're making a push for a championship team, I don't care what super team, I don't care if you're the Warriors, your best guys have to buy in, and all of them have to buy in. And if they buy in around the same time, then that's even more of a bonus. But you can put all these matchups together and all these guys together and egos together. To look at Cleveland right now, I think that their biggest problem is egos. You know, guys can't really figure it out right now. And that's hard. That's hard. You got Isaiah Thomas. He's a third string, or pretty much third fiddle right now. He's not used to that. He's coming from being a number one guy. But when you go back to those Detroit Pistons teams and those guys were 14 points a game and one guy would have a big game and all four would make an all-star team, those guys all sacrificed. They played a role to the best of their abilities and they all were talented, but the most importantly, they all sacrificed for one another. So that's the challenge to winning a championship and being a winning team.
And I also want to ask about the nature of where we're at trend-wise in the NBA, because it's obvious, you know, you've got pace and space, you've got can everybody shoot a three, Valanciunas going to the corner and starting to shoot threes this year. I mean, things have changed in the NBA quite a bit to the point where everybody needs to have that in their bag, pushing tempo, all this stuff needs to happen. You're not seeing guys grind and back you down and back you. Kevin McHale is not coming through that door right now. but it's interesting because the NBA is an adaptive league, and this is where we're at now. So I'm wondering if you want to try for a little bit of crystal ball here, what could be the next thing? Maybe not the next, oh, well, this is transformative, but the next thing that we're sleeping on. We've got these unicorn big men. We've got the Porzingis, Towns, Embiid types. That's already happened. We've got the threes types. That's already happened. Could it be something like the way teams defend? Oh, suddenly everybody's going to play zone defense, or maybe we will find Kevin McHale. What might you think could come down the pike next in the next couple of years that could change the way we look at the league?
I think you touched on it. I think defenses are going to have to adjust and really play, because offensively, that's what everybody's, you know, their directing their offenses on the three-point shot and how to manipulate the defenses and make the rotations less and everything like that. So defensively, I think it's going to have to be more of a focus on that. And the other thing is just more player development. If you're going to play a certain style, then you're going to have to develop players to play that style for you. And that's the difference than when I played before. You know, you put a style with players. If a player was a great isolation player, then you would make your offense, you know, compared to that. But now you're putting players in a certain offense to make the offense work. So I think that's the other piece, player development, constant player development, and now a defense. If I was a head coach, those are the two things that I would really focus on right now.
Is that why you think the Raptors have had so much success with their bench? And I know it still needs a little fine-tuning. I think they need to find a more dependable three-point shooter. But, I mean, you look at the guys that they've worked in here. These are basically organizational guys, aren't they? Poeltl, Wright, Fred VanVleet. I mean, they're Raptors guys.
Definitely. And you see it. You take the recipe from Popovich in San Antonio. Everyone always wondered, how does he find these guys that you never hear of, and they step up, and the team never suffers? Because for the stretch, you have a system, and you have roles that these guys are adjusted to, and they know what they have to do. You're not asking anyone to do anything that the offense doesn't require them to do. So once you go in there as a player and understand what you have to do night in and night out just for the offense, not for you individually, it's an easier adjustment, and it makes you play that much more consistent. So that's what the Raptors are having, and I think that's why they're having so much success from the bench. The bench guys, they're not guys that are wild. You. It's not like Jamal Crawford coming off the bench or Ginobili. It's you know, you have guys that are good, but they're playing in a great system with no pressure to do anything outside the norm. So the team is going to always be consistent and have some success along with those players. So I think it's a great thing.
I want to ask you also, and I understand you were not a player quite of Blake Griffin's caliber when this trade happened, but I punched up your basketball reference page. It's almost 20 years to the day that a very, very interesting blockbuster occurred. I'm going to read you the names on the. I love the names in this trade. I love everything about this trade in every way. The Portland Trail Blazers trade Alvin Williams, Kenny Anderson, Gary Trent, Bryce Drew, Mirsan Turkan, and a second-round pick that became Tyson Wheeler to the Raptors for Carlos Rogers, Damon Stoudemire, and Walt Williams. There's just so much 90s to digest here. I'm ecstatic about this trade. So, I mean, when you are dealt, and acknowledging maybe you were a linchpin, maybe you were a part of the trade, whatever, what does that feel like? The rest of us who don't get traded, we work for IBM, they're not trading us to Microsoft. It doesn't work that way. You're sitting there, you know, you're in the locker room or you're at home or whatever, and you get the text and says, oh, yeah, you're going to Toronto or you're going wherever. What does that feel like?
Well, I mean, I was so young. I had no clue. I remember playing the Phoenix Suns the night before, having my career high. My agent called me and said that, you know, you had your career high last night, but you got traded today. And I remember not even, like, taking them seriously. And I went to a mobile store. And back then you had pagers, and yes. I was getting a new pager, and the girl in the back, I gave her my name, and she said, I think you just got traded. So the girl in a phone store confirmed my trade. But I had no clue, man. I remember hearing about Kenny Anderson Damon Stoudemire wanting to leave Toronto, and they were talking about Kenny Anderson saying he's not going to Toronto. Then I ended up getting thrown into the trade because probably 2 or 3 days before, the coach sat down and told me that you're not going anywhere. We want you here next year. We want you here for the long term. And that's what I knew as a young player. Once a coach pulls you in that office and tell you that you're not going anywhere, 9 times out of 10, you're going somewhere.
The dreaded vote of confidence.
The dreaded vote of confidence. I was thinking the same thing.
That was it.